My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. This time it was my turn to pick, and we're actually doing this fun thing called the Summer of Lawrence, where to celebrate me maybe getting my master's and like just generally having a pretty rough last couple of months, where I get to pick for the next like month, couple of months. It's going to be fantastic. I'm really going to make these guys suffer. But anyways, so I picked a 1980s movie called Of Unknown Origin, where Peter Weller gets into a battle of wills with a large, but not like, oh my God, it's so fucking big rat. And Rahul is out, but we have Brandon coming in instead to, you know, keep things lively and stop it from just turning into me bullying Ronald nonstop, as tends to happen on our solo or our duo episodes.
Yes, and I'm the one who gets bullied.
Yeah, of course. Just endlessly. Bullied, owned. Be running long distances of that, acting like this has somehow defeated you, etc. Yeah. So anyways, the background
recommending
on this,
a movie when I ask for it and then saying that I'm owned when I watch it
and have a good time watching it. Yeah. Anyways, this movie, I have a slightly weird history for it. I have since high school religiously read this movie review website called 1000misspenthours.com, which is somehow like now, because every other movie review website has just succumbed to like incredible like SEO ad packing, it's like the only good movie review website left, which is really weird because it's just some weirdo in like, I think, Maryland cranking out reviews. But anyways, this is one of the very few movies on that he has given 5 stars to, which indicates that as far as he is concerned, it's a flawless masterpiece. So I saw that in high school and got the disc from Netflix, and I watched and I'm like, huh. And I still don't really understand why he gave it 5 stars. I don't think it's a bad movie, but you know, I think he gave Aliens like 4 stars, you know?
Yeah. Wow. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. So anyways, let's go around and would you recommend this? Brandon, you go first.
I guess I'd say I'd recommend it with the caveat that you should definitely know that you're getting into something that's a little bit weird, but yeah, overall it's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll go next. I think that this is an extremely strange movie because it is it's a movie where it's like nominally a horror movie where I don't think anyone's life is ever really in danger. And the main threat mostly seems to be that Peter Weller will get annoyed or frustrated by encounters with a rat up until the very end. And, but it's got this like real weirdly psychological intensity to it. So I say check it out just because it's so like strange to like see a man get into a battle of wills with a rat and have it be like beautifully acted for some reason. Ronald?
Yeah, I definitely recommend this one. I actually quite liked this movie. I don't know if I would give it a 5-star review, but I think this was really good. But I do think that the stakes weren't set to be high enough, like Lawrence was alluding to. And it's also, I kind of get where Brandon's coming from on it being a very strange movie as well, because it's like, there's a lot of things in this movie that don't seem to relate to each other, and it's kind of confusing where the original script was going with it. I guess we'll talk about that when we get to the highlights and lowlights, but overall I thought this movie was really cool. I just liked Peter Weller in it. He brought a strange intensity, and I also really liked the landlord. So yeah, I think this was a pretty fun one.
Yeah. Anyways, let's roll for the summary. Anyone not want to be included?
Nope. I'm good.
I'm good.
Okay. I'm going to be a 1-2, Brandon 3-4, and Ronald 5-6.
Sounds good.
Oh, it's Ronald. Okay, I'll set a timer for 1:30.
All right, I don't know if I'm going to need that much. But
I mean, okay. Yeah, there's not a lot of meat. I mean, it's a good movie, but, you know, it's not that.
There's not much to explain here. All right, give me a starter.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, a man lives in a really nice house that he renovated himself, and he works at a pretty good job. And he has a really hot wife and a kid. And his hot wife and kid go on vacation to go see her dad and leaves for a while. And while she's gone, he finds out that there's a rat in his house, and he talks to his landlord, and the landlord basically tells him that rats are really scary and smart, And if it's a female rat, it's even scarier and smarter. And some rats are like super rats for some reason, and they can get around traps. But then when he asks him what he should do about it, he just goes on about how rats can't be trapped. So it kind of begs the question what your point is. And he also calls him a grandma for if he decides to hire an exterminator. Meanwhile, at work, he has like he's up for some big job and that's going to get him a lot of money. But he's distracted the whole time because he's fighting this rat at home that breaks all of his traps and gets around everything he does, including eating a check that's made out for an exterminator that comes over. Finally, he puts on some battle armor, essentially, and puts some nails and screws through a bat and bashes up his entire house, but he kills the rat. That's basically the end. There's also a part, there's also a subplot where he makes out with his secretary, but then seems to not want to follow up with that.
Pretty good work, I feel. Yeah, so the whole movie is just Peter Weller goes to work and gets increasingly harried, and then like the rat does something, and then he tries to kill the rat, and then the rat does something else, and he just goes gradually crazier and crazier.
There's also a really great dinner scene where he just says a bunch of rat facts, and everyone seems weirded out by that.
Rat facts, the fact of the rat. I don't know why.
I can't. I don't know. That wasn't part of the movie.
No, but every time he said a rat fact, that played in my head for some reason.
Look, yeah. I can't tell you if those rat facts were real, but in the scope of this universe, I feel like they were in the movie's universe because the rat was very fucking powerful.
But I mean, the rat facts include if you start with two rats, in 3 years, you'll have 20 million rats. And apparently they'll be inbred as hell, I guess. And rats eat a fifth of the world's grain.
Yeah, that can't be true, right? I have no idea. It doesn't. It sounds preposterous.
I mean, exponential growth is a motherfucker, but I mean, that's still, at a certain point, your gene pool is just empty, you know?
Well, I was talking more of a fifth of the world's grain.
Oh, that too, yeah. Anyways, let's get into some high points, I guess. We're kind of already there, though.
Yeah. A lot of high points in this movie. What do you think, Brandon? You have any?
I mean, I'm going to start with the highest point for me, which was the scene where his landlord friend comes. So the secretary comes over to like yell at him that they got an extension because he's like abandoned work because he's like so distraught about like staying up at night and everything. Doesn't know what to do about the rat. She comes over and yells that he has an extension. He yells, "Go away, leave us alone." And the landlord like overhears this, and he's like, he's thinking like, "Oh yeah, maybe I need to like intervene. Like this seems like it's getting out of hand." So he walks over, and there's like a little side door to the basement entry that's just unlocked. So he just like pulls that and walks in. And this is the scene where he has the bat, and he's like hammering nails through it, and he's like screwing parts of like these bear trap type rat traps that broke apart. The metal jaws is screwing all that into the bat, and then he looks at it, he starts whacking it on the table with all his strength, and the guy just stands there and looks at him. And when Peter Weller like feels like he's done, he turns to the stairs like he's gonna go back upstairs. He sees his friend and he just kind of stares at him, and then his friend just says nothing, and he just walks back out. He's like, nope.
His friend up until this point has been the weirdest guy in the movie, who exists primarily to say strange facts about how rats are harder to kill than amoebas. But he's just like, this is too weird for me.
He claimed that they survived the nuclear test site.
Yeah, the only living thing to survive the nuclear blast was rats. Not even amoebas could live. Which I was like, what?
I tried
to look up if that was true.
Why would you look up if that was true, Ronald? It's clearly not.
I didn't think it was, but you know, I wanted to.
He had so much confidence.
Yeah, exactly.
Ronald googled, like, "Are rats made out of antimatter?" And are rats Godzilla?
Well, okay, and then also after he made that monologue about the rats living through radiation, I texted Lauren saying, like, I think they're alluding to the fact that this might be like a Godzilla type rat, but they never brought that circled around with that, so I guess that's probably not true.
Yeah, so my high point on this is basically just the rat. They strike this weird balance where it doesn't actually, like, it's, it doesn't do anything supernatural. It does stuff that makes you think it might be more intelligent than it is, but it's never like, okay, this rat is clearly plotting. It is pretty weird that it somehow chews up the exterminator check, but you do see it chewing up other shit like mail before. So even that, it's a little bit plausible. It strikes a real nice balance between this thing is a pretty realistic animal and also this thing is a fucking menace and Peter Weller might actually lose to it and get eaten or whatever the fuck's going to happen.
Yeah, totally. And just to add to that, I just feel like the rat, how the camera work was done with it was really good because it had a good mix of just like using stock footage of it walking around creepy, using like a perspective to like make the camera feel like the rat, and then also actually having the rat interact with the actor. Although I don't, you know, it's probably some stuffed animal or maybe a cat. I don't even know.
They cut around it so much that you couldn't really tell what they were doing with it very much, which was interesting. You do get a few shots of a rat puppet in dream sequences and they kind of look bad, but they don't show it to you. So it's fine.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, you can't have that big of a rat for real. And this is before CGI. So I think the fact that it was a horror and, you know, they didn't want to show too much of it. And when it was popping up, you know, because Peter Weller wasn't really seeing it either. I think it worked, personally. Yeah.
I also really like before you, I mean, you guys got it kind of spoiled, obviously, and so did I. But the movie plays coy that it's a rat for a while and kind of tries to make you think it's a ghost by just showing rat POV and weird noises and then stuff getting knocked over. And I kind of, if you, and then the trailers absolutely lie about what's going on. So I like the idea of someone going into this thinking it's like a normal haunted house horror movie. And then about a quarter of the way through finding out it's just about an unusually big, but not like freakishly big rat.
Not, well, not an especially normal, abnormal specimen.
Yeah.
Well, so I didn't know that it was a rat going into this. And so I was really kind of confused by like some of the initial sequences, especially when the landlord guy comes over to fix the dishwasher thing that got chewed through. And they had up to that point only showed like the rat's feet or something, but like super close up. So you had no scale and you couldn't see like the rest of its body or whatever. And so I just thought it was like some creature thing. And there's landlords like going on and on about rats. And I'm like, okay, is that really what this is going to be? Like, I thought this was a horror movie.
It can't really be a rat,
like,
right?
What? And then it was a rat. And I'm like, okay.
And you're like, wait, is this a regular rat? Does everyone in New York have the same issue?
Another high point I have, this is a quick one, but he reads a book called The Rat, Lapdog of the Devil. And that's a great title.
You should write that for real.
Except I don't know fuck all about rat. Well, on the other hand, that doesn't seem to really have stopped. If the rat facts he got were in that book, they could have just been completely made up.
Yeah, just make it the fuck up. Who cares?
Weird. And then at another point, he says, you want a war? I'll give you a war. Which I believe is a quote of Rambo, essentially. But he's saying it to a rat that's wrecking his house, but he could just leave.
Yeah. Also, it's very funny. I think another high point for me is that, like, I think that the crux of this movie is that the exterminator could wipe out the rat in like 5 seconds, but it can never come over because he can't ever get a hold of one.
Yeah.
Which is that's just a really solid way of like, oh yeah, I guess exterminators work, but they're just not here.
It's that it's the 1980s equivalent of you forgot to charge your cell phone before you left is like the necessary like thing that has to happen for the movie to work.
Yeah, except it's all the rats in New York City or all the exterminators in New York City are busy.
Yeah.
Probably because everyone's at war with rats.
I get another high point, and this is probably like this movie. It's one of those, it's not well known, but if you know style deals, which I guess describes most things in the world, actually, but bear with me. But the one thing that people will remember from this movie is the scene where Peter Weller has poisoned the rat with something that will make it very thirsty. And so he gets up in the middle of the night and he goes to the bathroom and he's about to piss. And then he pulls up the toilet cover and there's just an enormous fuck off rat that lunges at him. And you know what? That's pretty scary.
Yeah, I would piss my pants, except I guess maybe I'd piss on the rat. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't want to piss on the rat because it's extremely thirsty and it will just go try like it'll go straight for your dick.
Yeah, right. So I might, you know, if that happened to me, might be cockless, boys.
Yeah. To quote the supervisor landlord guy, you get in his way and he'll go right through you. In this case, your dick.
This guy had a lot of knowledge about rats. Like, how many times has he been in this situation, do you think?
This is like a secret night rite of passage New Yorkers have to go through, killing the rat.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. Brandon, sorry.
I was going to say that just his existence was another general high point. Is that like the way he talked every time that Peter Weller had to like interact with him for more advice or whatever was just hilarious. Like, especially just starting at the first dishwasher scene where like at that point it didn't really make sense. He's talking like, how do I put this? It's kind of like his tone is the sort of like mobster, like, oh, it'd be a real shame if somebody had let this rat loose in your house and then you couldn't get rid of it or whatever. But he's actually just giving advice and he's not, but he's like kind of having this threatening tone about it. And then, yeah, he seems to know all this stuff and he's like making it sound really spooky too, like how intelligent rats are and everything. So it's just hilarious, this whole blend of attitudes.
He gives this quote to explain why rats are so scary, which is that humans spend only like 10 minutes a day thinking about rats, but rats spend all their time thinking about how they're going to beat you. It's like, no, that cannot possibly be true, dude.
I wish that were true because that is badass, but like my only problem with the landlord is that he wasn't in it enough. Like, he was probably my favorite character. And after like 15 minutes into the movie, he kind of stopped showing up, except for that one great scene at the end. Yeah, he doesn't really even have any lines.
If this movie were like 10% like less realistic, he would have ended up getting eaten by the rat right before the climax, you know?
Oh, that's absolutely what I thought was going to happen. Yeah. Thought he was going to be helping and we're the exterminator.
Yeah. No one gets eaten by a rat in this. There's a couple of dream sequences where his son eats rat poison and Shannon Tweed, his wife, gets attacked by a rat. But other than that, it's pretty much everything that happens here is something that a rat could theoretically do, although it's a little weird that this rat is doing all of them, you know?
It is a hyper-aggressive rat.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
If a rat was that aggressive, it probably has rabies and Peter Weller is going to die because he got bit several times.
And didn't go get a vaccine.
It didn't go get a vaccine, right?
Yeah. Let's see. Let's get into some like goofier stuff, although that's not what we've been doing. I don't think that there's actually that many. I guess, does anyone have like actual low points in this movie?
Well, I have something that I don't know if it qualifies as a low point. Maybe it's goofy. But the fact that like they had two different, at least to what felt like to me, like sort of suspense moments of the secretary coming into his house and being like, oh shit, he has all these like miniature, what are basically miniature bear traps that he has out for the rat, and they're still just around his house, and you know, you think that she's gonna step on them and she doesn't, she, you know, gets through safely. And then later he's like trying to recover them to see if they've caught him, or I don't know, reset food in them, or I don't know what he's doing. And there's one in like a little model house in the basement and it's not where he left it, so he decides that the best course of action is to just grope around blindly where he can't see, looking for the trap, surprise, surprise, it fucking gets him, like, really badly.
The worst injury he gets is like, because he just
puts he knows he's a bear trap. Looking for a bear trap, and like, why are you groping around for it? What is that going to accomplish?
He even says, what happened? Did you move the trap? And it's like, yes, that is exactly what happened. Why are you...
Don't shove so hard if you're going to do that.
Take the roof off the house and look, dude, or something. Jesus Christ.
Also, I have to imagine bear traps would not be activated by a rat, right? You have to put a decent amount of pressure on those plates.
I think that these are some kind of like super rat trap, you know?
I think they're smaller than actual bear traps, but they were very much modeled like bear traps.
Yeah, fair enough. But in that case, it is very, very dangerous to have them around your house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just take a tiny bit of pressure to set off.
At one point, he sticks like, I think it's an action figure's head into it, and it just like bites clean through it. And I mean, plastic is not bone, but still, plastic is tougher than human skin, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, let's see. One thing that I was kind of amused by is the business plot line in the background, which he was on some kind of like thing where he was trying to help some Arab people buy grain through a cutout or something. And then he gets put on a bank reorganization because apparently he works for kind of a generic consulting firm, I think. And his argument for the bank reorganization is first that he, this is what he says, not what I believe, but he says he's going to bring in the Orientals because they're great profit people. So I guess his strategy is just he's going to employ some weird racist stereotypes. And then later he proposes that they should close the bank locations in like wealthy areas to serve more underfunded communities because they tend to pay their mortgages back more, which I guess is kind of nice. And then after that, he kind of just decides to stop going into work so that he can fight a rat, and we never find out what happens. Aside from, there, you know how in Westerns sometimes there'll be that scene where the gunfighter is like saying goodbye because he's going to go and get into the final gunfight. And he like says, you know, I'm going to go do what I got to do. And if I see you later, I see you. And if not, just know that I'm so glad I knew you or something like that. You know, like in Shane or what the fuck ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does that with his boss where he's like, I'm going to go take care of it. And when I come back, if you've given the work away, that's your choice. And if you haven't, that's your choice too. But I'm not coming back until this is finished. But he's talking about going into his house and trying to hit a rat with a baseball bat.
Like, yeah, like, does, I don't think the boss fully knew what he was talking about, but I'm pretty sure if he had explained, like, yeah, I'm going to go fight a rat at my house, he would have been like, what are you fucking talking about?
Real talk, the boss almost certainly thought that he was just going through, like, a trial separation leading to divorce, because he mentioned that his wife was going and staying with her family in Vermont. She wasn't at the dinner party, and then he keeps looking increasingly haggard and distracted and kind of drunk, you know?
That's what
he suggests the very first time it comes up as an issue. He like says that, but then he like says, oh, you know, don't worry about it. Don't say anything about it, or you don't need to explain or whatever. So he just assumed that from the beginning.
Now, so he's not, when he had all that weird clothes on, he's like, I gotta go home and maybe I'll be back. He's like, are you about to go kill someone, dude? Are you about to go kill your wife?
Are you gonna go try to win her back by finally giving into her strange fetish for men in cleats who haven't shaved in a few days? Yeah,
I'm hoping it's the latter. Hopefully he's a wholesome boss.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, here's another weird thing. This is more of a goofy thing. So this is definitely not the best movie Peter Weller made. That's got to be like RoboCop, right?
Probably.
But it is almost... So his wife is played by Shannon Tweed, who you may not know, but she is kind of a star of erotic, like Cinemax-style movies in the like early 90s through 2000s, with... the kind of things that have titles named like Silk Seductions or Erotic Shadows, you know, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And the director is mostly known for having made Cobra. So this is almost certainly the best movie that either of them were ever involved in.
Huh.
Yeah. Cobra is that movie where Sylvester Stallone battles an axe cult.
I have not seen that one. Is it? It's probably not great though, huh?
I mean, it's amazing, but not because... for the reasons it's trying to be amazing.
I see.
Because again, it's Sylvester Stallone battling an axe cult. As of course, a hard apple detective named Marion Cabretti.
That's how they get Cobra.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's famous because there's this scene. Well, it's famous for a lot of things, but there is this scene where he's just walking through the police precinct. Someone else has pizza and he like just grabs it. Then he grabs some scissors, cuts the tip off the piece of pizza and eats that.
Oh, I've seen that clip.
Yeah, it's a famous clip. Anyways, back to this movie, not that movie, which we didn't watch. So I shouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah. Okay. I have a low point. And this is kind of a low point because I still quite liked this movie, but I think probably the weakest part of this movie is that, like, I don't think that they really knew what the movie was about. And when I say that, I don't necessarily mean like, you know, that it has to be about something deeper than a man fights a rat. But like, there's some stuff in this movie that was like, it's baffling why it's in there. And for example, the work plot line, it feels like that's going to culminate in something. But the culmination of that plot line is that, like, oh, don't worry, the project got delayed, so you're good to keep fighting the rat.
It's unclear if that actually matters because he also shouted at his secretary to go away. So we straight up do not know anything about his work at the end of this. The plot line just stops at a certain point. Okay.
Yeah, and there's also that part I think is supposed to be a very important part of the movie.
I mean, one sec, but his secretary literally comes up and and shouts at the house, basically, would you like to continue the work plot line? And Peter Weller shouts back, no.
Well, yeah.
Anyways.
But that part of the movie, yeah, that part of the movie. So the secretary is definitely romantically interested in him and also is like interested in his work and trying to just actually trying to help him succeed. And she goes to his house and yells like, you're fine. You can do the project. It got delayed 2 weeks. And he yells, go away. We don't want you here. We, referring to him and the rat, which like you think, okay, so there's some kind of theme in this about how actually he's kind of like getting down to his base form. He actually enjoys this contest with the rat more than he enjoys his work. But it just doesn't culminate in anything. He just kills the rat, and that's the end of the movie. Like, he's happy.
Well, that's not quite the end of the movie, Ronald. Incidentally, do I sound louder now? I messed with the gain.
No, you sound fine.
No.
Okay. No, the culmination of the movie is his wife and son come home. And then his wife comments, look at you. You're so wet. And then they go inside, and she's like, what happened to the house? And he's like, I had a party. And that's
okay.
It.
That's true. That is a little ending, but that also felt like what? Like, yeah. Was the party supposed to imply that there was he had a fun time fucking killing a rat? Like, I don't.
Yeah, I mean the whole movie leading up to that felt like a sort of descent into madness, and then it just kills it, and he's like, ah, okay, glad that's over with. I'm fine.
Sweet. I wasn't actually crazy. It was the fact that there was a giant rat in my house that would actually drive anyone nuts. So you guys can understand where I'm coming from, right?
Also, another low point, I guess, although he doesn't confirm the kill on the rat. And it really seems like he should after everything he's been through.
Yeah. Yeah. He just kind of leaves it sitting there. And I was like, oh, that thing's coming back to life. But then it didn't.
Because again, rats in the real world don't really do that. And this is a semi-realistic rat, I guess. But still, at this point, you really think he'd like be parading its corpse around or some shit after everything it's done to him.
To be fair, he did kill its babies at one point.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty sad for the rat.
Yeah.
And for a long time in the movie, I was rooting for the rat. In fact, most of the movie. So...
You felt a certain spiritual kinship with it, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
You both like scurrying, cheese.
Chewing on wires.
Yeah.
Yeah, chewing on wires.
But definitely Peter Weller.
Battling Peter Weller. That's a classic activity.
I don't know. At one point he calls the rat a tart, which is funny.
Yeah. I mean, what are the themes in this movie? Like, is... the rat supposed to represent like something like, are the three different women in the movie, the rat being one of them, supposed to represent like the different things that, you know, a person is attracted to?
I literally think that this movie is just about how fucked up, but also cool it would be if Peter Weller went insane while fighting a rat. And I don't think they really gave it much thought more than that.
But he didn't even go insane. He was fine after he killed it.
He wasn't doing good.
I feel like there's something there. I just don't know what the director was going for.
I think the director was going for, I bet if I made a movie where Peter Weller fought a rat, people would pay money to see that, and then I could make money. Not everything means a thing, Ronald. Sometimes it's just a big rat that gets hit by a bat. And well, also
there's some strange lines in here that if he was just fighting the rat the whole movie, I could understand it. But why was the secretary in this at all?
I don't know. So that at one point he could get cock blocked by a rat.
Did he though? Because it seemed like he wasn't into her.
I think that he moved to kiss her and then they were making out a little and then he heard the rat noises and he's like, oh right, I gotta do that, and told her to leave.
Yeah, but then after that he wouldn't let her come in the house.
Yeah, because he remembered his true purpose, which was rat battling.
I don't know, Brandon, what do you think? Is there something deeper here, or is it just totally surface level? He fought a rat, and that's the end of the movie.
I don't know. I will agree that like the secretary is the one sort of confounding variable of like why, like her role towards the middle to end of the movie got weird. But I mean, I have to say that no, probably there's nothing cohesive there.
Yeah, because like if it was just to have like a hot woman in the movie. Why wasn't Shannon Tweed and more in the movie?
And this like, is The secretary would actually have been a slightly bigger star than Shannon Tweed. I believe this was her first movie.
Shannon Tweed's?
Yeah.
Okay, well, fine. Then if the secretary was supposed to be, just like a hot woman to be in the movie or whatever, like, why wouldn't he have been romantically interested?
Because he had to fight the rat.
Well, that's like a plot thing, though. Like, why is he so interested in fighting the rat in the movie?
Because it's gonna mess up his house, and the house like is important to him because he spent a lot of work renovating it and can't really afford the mortgage, so he definitely can't afford to deal with all the rat damage.
But he destroyed it to kill the rat, and then
because he lost his mind to the rat madness.
Well, yeah, man, maybe you solved it. Maybe that's what the director was going for. The director's like, you know what? He's like really into this house, but he's going to bash it all up, and then that's the end of the movie.
I mean, he's not really.
And somebody said, why does he bash it up? And he's like, I don't know. He doesn't like rats. He's like, why doesn't he like rats? Because they'll bash up the house.
that was like a not very deep thing. That was like a recurring thing between the beginning and end, where at the beginning, his son is like making cereal with like two or three different boxes of cereal, and he's just looking for the toy, but he's making a mess, so he corrects him. And then when he's dragging the suitcase out of the house, he like slightly pulls on one of their rugs, and he's like, hey, like, what about the carpet or whatever? He like wants him to do something about the suitcase dragging on it. I don't know. And then at the very end, after he kills the rat and he's already done all this damage, he's like walking through the hallway and he looks at a vase and he just like tips it over off the table and breaks it. Just be like, fuck you. I don't know, it's like, yeah, he kind of gave up on everything being perfect, but it's like, if he was driven crazy by the rat, maybe that's what it is. he was freed by the rat, because he had this like obsessive need for everything in the house to be perfect because he worked so hard making it perfect, but the rat is teaching him to let it go.
There you go. Actually, you might be onto something. I've heard, like, when people have a phobia, or like a not necessarily a phobia, but like a compulsion or an obsession with something, like worrying about the house burning down, like if they constantly think about like, oh god, if I do this, the house will burn down, like the most relieving moment they can have is when their house burns down.
Yeah,
because then they're like, well, that's the worst of it's over.
And that's why Ronald has a second career as a serial arsonist. He's freeing people from their fears.
Anyways. Hey, let's not talk about that anymore.
I got something way less deep than all this shit. Right? So he goes to the library at one point to learn a lot of rat facts so that he can later ruin a dinner party by reciting rat facts. Right?
Yeah.
So at the library, they've got a bunch of film strips of like horrifying rat carnage, because apparently rats will like eat parts of each other's bodies, and it's pretty hard to watch. It's from a documentary. They didn't film it for the movie or anything. And he's reading The Rat, Lapdog of the Devil. But he's also just, apparently the library just has a bunch of loose printed out color photos of rat bite victims, and he's just kind of leafing through them. It's like, why does the library have that shit? They're not in a book. It's just like, it's like, give me the rat attack files, and they're just handed it to
me. Give me all photos related to rat bites.
I mean, we did establish this is just like a scourge of the city that everybody's
doing. Yeah, that's true. Actually, yeah, given this is an alternate universe where rats are like the scariest possible thing, it would make sense for the library to have that.
Yeah. And then, you know, I guess one last like thing for me, and then we'll go around to you guys. So he's like, okay, what kills a rat? A cat. And there's conveniently just a cat kind of hanging out on his doorstep. Apparently it's a stray, or I guess maybe he stole someone's cat. So he picks it up. It doesn't claw the shit out of him, so it's unlike any cat I've ever known. And he takes it inside, gives it some 2-week-old oysters, and comments that he used to love cats, but his wife is allergic, so he can't have them anymore. And then several scenes later, he's getting some milk, and something red drips down into it, and he discovers the horribly destroyed corpse of the cat just kind of sitting on top of the fridge.
And poor cat.
Yeah, the poor cat. But also, I mean, do we think that he just stole someone's cat, or he somehow found the one stray cat in the world that will let you pick it up?
It was either somebody else's cat, or it was like a neighborhood cat.
Yeah, it was.
It was definitely not like, what are those called? Like a Tomcat.
Feral?
Yeah, it was definitely not feral.
Oh, sorry. I have one other thing. So he keeps going to the hardware store and trying to buy more stuff. And there's one scene where the hardware store owner keeps trying to like sell him rope and shit. And at one point he goes, "You need some scissors to cut some stuff?" Yeah. That's a good sales pitch for scissors.
What a salesman.
That would work on me.
Yeah. Anyways, he really is just like offering him a lot of random stuff. And Peter has to keep like keeping him on track.
Yeah, like, no, I have specific things I'm looking for, you ass.
That scene kind of, I mean, he's buying like gloves and poison and all this shit. And that scene kind of plays like he's about to murder his wife. He's buying supplies. So the guy is trying to help him out by offering him rope. Anyways, you guys got high points or low points, whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I got one more. This isn't really a specific point in the movie. I don't think that this movie gave rats a fair shake. Rats are like, you know, obviously they're all over New York. They're disease-ridden little varmints. No doubt about it. But generally, I think rats are like pretty kind creatures. And like, I know that they had that documentary showing the rats eating each other. But I think, I don't know if that's specific to rats, or I think they might have been showing mice, because mice do that.
Or my theory on that is basically that most animals will do that if they're starving.
That's probably true too. So like I said, you know, in a specific scenario, maybe rats would do it. But from what I understand, rats are like actually found to be very compassionate creatures that like will help, or one of the few animals that will like help each other out if given the opportunity. So, you know, a single rat in my house, it would be annoying, but it doesn't scare me that much because I find rats kind of adorable.
I mean, you'd probably try to get rid of it just from a disease angle, but it wouldn't
be like... Yeah, you gotta get rid of it, but it wouldn't be like, oh my god, there's a rat in my house.
I mean, until it started doing the thing.
Time to go to war.
It's not like a Zergling.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's not like, I don't know, whatever the movie was making it out to be at the start.
You know, if you have 2 Zerglings, 3 years later, 20 million Zerglings.
That might actually be true.
That could be true.
I mean, it's not, because Zerglings aren't real, though.
Well, still.
Yeah.
True.
Well,
Brandon.
So, and to your point, Ronald, I'd like to bring up I can't really quote it directly. It's kind of a long thing, but the quote from Inglourious Basterds in the fairly early in the beginning, where the SS guy is saying like, well, what's the difference between like a rat and a squirrel? Like, why do you dislike rats and why do you like squirrels? Like, if your squirrel came in here, like, you'd give it a saucer of milk. And if rat came in here, you'd like chase it out with a stick or whatever. But it's like, they can carry all the same diseases and, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And I mean, he ends up talking about the Jews, so we don't need to go there, but.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's an SS officer.
Right.
Not talk about Jews.
Right.
He brings up a point, which is so heinous that you're like, oh, I guess that I've given rats a bad rap.
But then he somehow turns it into, you should hate Jews, instead of thinking, well, if, I mean...
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of being kinder to rats.
Yeah.
Or maybe, I mean, Nazi propaganda, which I do not agree with, frequently associated rats and Jews with one another. So you'd think if he starts talking about how rats are cool, he might be suddenly hinting that he's cool with Jews. But no, not at all. He's just a bastard. Like everyone in the SS, I would say.
But I mean, I do feel like the whole, like, you know, why are people so kind to squirrels but mean to rats? I personally don't get it. I wouldn't want a squirrel in my house either.
Rats do tend to like go in places like inside houses in a way squirrels usually don't, and also will eat your food. So I guess the rat is slightly more dangerous, not because it's like going to eat you, but just because you're going to hang out with it more without knowing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's dumb though. Anyways. You guys want to play a game?
Let's play a game.
And this game is just me asking you questions.
Oh, right.
So, and I know you're going to be like, that's not a game. And I'm like, shut the fuck up, nerd. So anyways.
Can just skip that part.
Yeah. What is the worst advice you have ever been given?
Worst advice I've ever been given?
So I have two, a funny one and a not funny one. I don't know if this is actually like, legitimately the worst advice I've ever been given. But one time, I think Brandon was actually there for this. We were hanging out at high school and this girl came up to us and said, hey, I've locked my keys in my car.
Can You Help? Oh my
God. And I know what this is.
And Brandon,
maybe you don't want to say this. Maybe you don't want to say this in a place where somebody could prove that it's you.
No, I think you might be thinking something different. So Brandon or whatever was like, okay, well, obviously none of us knew how to pick locks and we're not going to break a window and we didn't have any of the tools. But someone, it was either Brandon or Rahul said, oh, if you get up on the roof of a car and jump up and down, it will unlock the doors. And I'm like,
why would you think I was thinking of something else?
I don't know. This doesn't appear to be a crime I would need to hide from. But anyways, and I'm like, is that true? And they're like, yes, that's how bears get into cars in Yellowstone.
I remember saying it was bears, yeah.
And it's like, wait, now that I'm looking back on it, I'm like, what? No, that can't. No, but anyways, so I believed them. So I got up on the car and started jumping and ended up denting that poor girl's roof.
That was a crime. That was the crime I'm talking about.
No, it was her car. She saw me do it. She was a part of this process.
She saw it, therefore it's not a crime.
I mean, I don't think that logic tracks.
The fact that she saw it means she might still be looking for you.
No, she and then she told me to get off, so I stopped. I don't see any criminality coming into this. If someone says, hey, get up on my roof and do something stupid.
Did she say to do that?
I mean, I think she...
Or did she just overhear you guys talking and watched in horror as you jumped on her roof?
No, she was an active participant in this. I remember that. She thought that this might work too.
Okay.
Although, I think she might have been a little bit like, hey, I'm not sure. But she wasn't like, absolutely not, you know. And although that...
I have a hard time believing anyone was like, yeah, Lawrence, go ahead and jump on my roof until it shrivels up like a tin can so the door's open.
And... I still to this day do not know if Rahul honestly believed that was good advice and would work, or was
no,
just
he didn't.
God damn it!
No, that's why we added the bears thing.
So I guess I was very stupid or trusting in high school. Anyways, I was a freshman. If that
even
makes
sense. If it opened the door, it would never be able to close.
Well, I thought it was going to somehow jiggle the mechanisms. There's mechanisms in there. And maybe they respond to jiggling.
They were jiggling, all right.
Yeah. Commence the jiggling.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I can't believe we didn't have Rahul on this one. I want to hear his take on this like 15 years later.
We can ask him about it next pod.
Okay.
I can confront him with his betrayal of me and see if he regrets it. Of course not. That man does not have guilt as you or I understand it. Anyways, I guess the other bad advice I got was my dad and everyone else being kind of cool with me, like majoring in like English, which just not, I mean, I kind of drifted into it, but bad idea. There were like, no real job prospects for it. And I know that people are like, well, college is a time to find yourself and whatever. And, you know, if you like have another way of making money, then that's fine. But it's pretty good to just have money. And then you can do like the finding yourself stuff in your spare time while you have money. So at least for me, I think that it would be much better if I just majored in CS or whatever from the start and not pissed away 4 years of my life binge drinking and writing weird essays. Yeah, it was.
To be fair, that wasn't all the writing. Oh, that wasn't all the English degree's fault.
Yeah, that's true. But maybe if I'd had more challenging classes, I wouldn't have binge-drinked so much. Who knows?
Or maybe.
Yeah. Anyways, Ronald, what's the worst advice you've ever gotten?
Yeah. Okay. So the worst advice I ever got was about an hour ago. I told Lawrence and Rahul that. So we were talking about sprinklers. I told Lawrence and Ruffle that since I moved to the East Coast, sprinklers aren't out here, which I find very strange. But Brandon's probably used to that, right? Because you're also in a very rainy area.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did not realize that there were parts of the world where you just didn't need sprinklers for lawns. And so I found it very strange. But I told them that like everyone else in this area thinks it's weird to have sprinklers and that I'm weird for thinking that lawns should have sprinklers or whatever. And Lawrence's advice was, kill them, flay them, wear their skins as clothes. If they think you're a weirdo, you might as well be one. And you know what? I don't think that's very good advice.
Yeah, it would make your life more interesting if you did that. And then I also pointed out that you could use their dicks to make an extension for your dick, which would make it easier for you to put your dick up your ass and piss in there like a bidet to clean it out, which is something that Robert does.
And this is too far of a weird in joke in our group chat.
Am I going to have to cut this too?
We'll see. You're going to have to cut it, but no one's going to know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, Ronald said I should do that one. You know what? That might be the worst advice I've ever gotten, although it's not the worst advice I've ever. I didn't act on it, so it doesn't stick in my mind. But I mean, it wouldn't work, first of all. And second, if it did work, it would just make my pants disgusting. And
that's not what I said to do. Although what I said was pretty disgusting, so we don't need to get into
it. I love that you're like, Lawrence, you're taking my advice about cleaning your butt with fucking piss from your own dick.
Why do you have to make it wrong? So obscene?
Anyways, this is
oh my god. Okay, Brandon, how about you, man? It's the worst advice you've ever gotten.
All right, I don't know if I have a great example. It's definitely a lot tamer than those things, but maybe that's a good way to wind it down.
Yeah,
but
kind of bring us down to real life again.
Yeah, when I was applying for master's programs, I was trying to get recommendations from some of my professors, and I met with one of them, and he's like, yeah, no, I have no problem writing this, but you know, really, I think that you should stay here and get a PhD with me, like, you know, study under him, have him be my advisor or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I just want to get a master's. I don't want to get a PhD. That's like a lot more time commitment. And like, I don't want to teach. And I don't think I really want to do research either. And he's like, oh no, like you'll barely have to do that. And like, it's only going to be 2 years.
What? It's like,
what? And
what?
I just kept like saying, no, I think I just am going to do this. But yeah, I mean, every person I've told that to afterward, they're like, that's just like not physically possible. I don't know why he would tell you that.
Dude, that seems like horrible advice. That's like entrapment.
I mean, you literally have to like do that thing where you take more hours than you're allowed to.
And that's not even including like the fucking thesis.
I mean, I just feel like the time for people to write their thesis is already like more than 2 years by itself.
Yeah, I mean, it like varies wildly too.
Unless he was offering to like commit like massive academic fraud and just hand you a thesis. Mm. Now, the coursework alone, I mean, if it's anything like, if it's equivalent to a master's, that takes 2 years. Then writing the thesis, Jesus.
Yeah, unless you'd already done something in undergrad that he was like, yeah, we could turn this into your thesis. I just don't see how that you could have done that. That was, you know, maybe you could have done it, like done the coursework and everything. I don't know how time-wise that would ever work. It really feels like he was trying to trap you.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on. So I'm glad I didn't take that advice, though.
Or
that was really terrible advice. You know,
was
what?
He a native English speaker by any chance?
He was not.
So maybe he just didn't know what a PhD was.
Okay, he definitely knows he has a PhD.
Pretty sure he knew that it was. And I'm pretty sure he knows how long a year is.
Yeah. Not really a language barrier thing.
He's like, oh, I meant decades.
Anyways, okay. Let's do some recommendations and cautions. What do you guys think?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, so why don't you go first, Ronald?
Okay. Okay, I've got a recommendation, and it's for a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. You know what? Paul Thomas Anderson movie from 2012 called The Master, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Wouldn't you know it, Paul Thomas Anderson is a good director, and he made a pretty good movie starring Joaquin Phoenix. The acting in this is incredible. The shot direction in this is incredible. I don't think the script is that good. The dialogue is amazing, but the overall story of this doesn't connect, in my opinion. And not in like a good way where you think about it a lot. You're like, huh, what was that about? Because that's fine. Because you kind of go into Paul Thomas Anderson movies thinking like, okay, you know, this is not going to be an open and shut movie. But at the end of this movie, you're just kind of like, what was this movie even about? Like, why did these characters get together? And then like, why did they even, I don't even really understand what the main drift apart was. But it's about Here's my summary that I wrote of it. A mentally disturbed semen happens across. Yeah, exactly. Mentally disturbed semen happens across a powerful cult leader, and the two form a strange relationship, which is about as really into it as you can get. Philip Seymour Hoffman is the cult leader, and he's the titular master. And I think he's based on L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh yeah, extremely, although, to the point where he's like auditing people with the essentially an e-meter.
Right. Yeah. I mean, okay. So let me put it this way: he's based on L. Ron Hubbard in a lot of his actions, but there's no real, like, the movie doesn't do any kind of inspection into the character, where it kind of does any kind of judgment into L. Ron Hubbard himself. It just kind of has some of his characteristics in it, which. I don't know. I just don't really know what to think of this movie. I've only seen two other Paul Thomas Anderson movies, which is There Will Be Blood and Licorice Pizza. I think this is my least favorite of his movies that I've seen so far. My next one that I'm watching is Boogie Nights, so I'll report back on that one. I think that this was a good movie, but I don't think it's his best, but it's still an easily a recommendation. It's still a really good movie.
I'd like to chime in here, where if you're like, I don't want to watch that because it's all artsy fartsy. It also has a truly epic amount of nudity.
It does. And, like, honestly, it's let's see how long it is. It is 100, so it's 2.5 hours long. It's pretty long, but, like, it's got a lot of really great scenes. It's not really boring, I don't think. There are some scenes that are, like, longer than you expect, but, you know, that's just, like, kind of how he does stuff. I don't think it's as slow as There Will Be Blood, which I quite like There Will Be Blood, but it's a very slow movie. So, I don't know. I think it's pretty watchable personally. Okay. And then, caution. I recently watched the 2003 movie directed by Sean Levy called Cheaper by the Dozen, starring Steve Martin, Barney
Wait,
Hunt,
why? Hilary Duff. And what, why did you watch that?
I don't know. I just felt like it. I saw some YouTube video of the kids growing up now, and I remember being, and I saw the video being like, oh hey, those, that's like 20 years have passed now. And then I thought, I never watched that movie when I was a kid. I wonder what it's like. So if you're not familiar with the movie, I think it's a remake of something from back in like the 60s. I don't exactly know when the first one was, but it's about a family with 12 kids and they move to a new house. It's a kids movie. It's a very palatable movie. I think if I had nostalgia for this movie, I would have quite liked it, but I never saw it as a kid, so it didn't really relate to me in that way.
I'm imagining a movie poster for it now where they're just like, you know, the everyone, and then at the bottom, palatable, Ronald Shaw.
Yeah, I would be fine with that, if that, from that being my quote from it. I think it was very palatable. It was 106 minutes, and it went by very fast. There was a couple of okay jokes in it. It mostly wasn't very funny, but it did have, like, you know, some kid bits in it that, like, there's these twins who just are like troublemakers and were pretty funny. So I don't know. I had an okay time with it, but if you've never seen it before, you're not watching it for nostalgia, I wouldn't recommend it. That's it for me.
Okay, Brandon, would you like to go next?
Sure. So I didn't watch this recently, but I think about this movie from time to time. So hopefully I didn't recommend this in a previous one, but I'm going to recommend Stranger Than Fiction. It's a 2006 movie with Will Ferrell, Emma Thompson, Dustin Hoffman. And I think this is probably the only movie I've seen with Will Ferrell that I would classify as like a dramatic role. And I know he can be like kind of polarizing when it comes to comedy, but I think this was really good. I mean, I mostly like him when it comes to comedy, but this is definitely very different, and I really liked it. It starts out, he's an IRS worker who sort of has OCD. I mean, he basically likes to count all kinds of things. Like, he counts toothbrush strokes and his steps to work and et cetera. And he, one day he starts hearing a voice in his head that's like narrating everything he's doing. And, anytime he stops to like listen to it, the voice stops. And then when he continues doing what he's doing, it starts narrating again. And he eventually goes to talk to Dustin Hoffman, who's like a English literature professor, to like understand what's going on. Everybody that he talks to thinks that he's crazy, but Dustin Hoffman kind of starts to humor him, and they eventually figure out that it's actually this author who hasn't written a book in a while, but she's like really respected, and all of the books that she writes, the main character dies at the end. So when they realize it's like she's narrating his book, or like is she narrating his life? Is it about her writing this book? And I think it's like that whole, the like sort of the interaction between the three of them is really interesting. And also during the whole, this whole process, he has to start auditing this girl who owns a bakery who really hates him. And they have like a whole romantic thing to, you know, because of his kind of changing personality, because of his realization that this thing is happening. And yeah, so I don't know. That was a really weird summary, but I really liked it.
You know what I like about that premise too, is that like, that's a movie that would not be released in theaters in a post-COVID era. Like it would be a direct to streaming, and just feels like it would have a different vibe. You know what I mean?
It's a pretty charming movie from my memories of it. I liked it when I was in high school.
I haven't seen it since back then, but I remember quite liking it. But just like, it just also harkens to a different era of movie making, I guess.
Yeah, where it's like kind of a light comedy. It's a little bit whimsical, but not too much. Anyways.
And kind of sold on the premise, you know?
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. So I'm going to go next. Oh, wait, do you have a caution? Wait.
Well, Brendan only did one.
Yeah, I don't have a caution. So.
Oh, he doesn't have a caution. Okay, sorry, my bad.
Okay, go ahead. So I'm going to do two recommendations, no cautions. First, I saw this movie, The Pope's Exorcist, and I was explaining it to Ronald, and he said that nothing about the movie sounded like it appealed to him, which I'm going to tell you about this movie, and you're going to realize what a fool Ronald is sometimes. So first off, it stars Russell Crowe at his sort of new jumbo size role. He spends the entire movie doing a kind of Mamma Mia, I make a you da pizza pie style Italian accent because he's playing the titular Pope's exorcist. He gets involved with this like American family who have for some reason moved into an Italian former abbey and are Spanish and are trying to renovate it, and their son gets possessed, so he has to team up with a Spanish priest, and they spend the entire thing talking in English for some reason, even though it really seems like they both should speak Latin because they're both fucking priests, but what do I know. And he spends a lot of the movie riding around on a Vespa and telling jokes. His Vespa later turns out to be very important to the plot. And then in the background, while he's investigating this, he's also being like, the Catholic Church has decided that exorcisms are too old-fashioned and they're thinking about retiring him. But fortunately, his best friend, the fucking Pope, is in his corner and is helping him by doing research behind the scenes. So the Pope is kind of his Q figure, or his like hacker, kind of like giving him all the intel. And the Pope is played by Franco Nero. And there's one scene where the Pope gets like sick because, well, first off, the Pope at one point senses that he's in great danger because apparently the Pope has force powers. And then the Pope gets very sick because his friend's in danger, and they take him to the hospital, and then the Pope projectile vomits blood on a guy, Evil Dead style. And you know what? That's kind of all I want in a movie. The Pope to projectile vomit blood on people. So, yeah.
And Russell Crowe to do an Italian accent.
And ride on a Vespa while wearing a silly robe and a silly hat. So yeah, it's a great movie. Also, there's nudity, and you don't expect there to be nudity because it happens like 20 minutes from the end. And it's supposed to be based on a true story, but it also features a literal portal to hell. So either they change the story a lot, or the person who wrote it is the biggest liar in the history of the fucking world. Anyways, aside from that, wow. It's a great time at the movies. Seek it out.
I feel like your pitch started off strong, but then I was just like, I don't care anymore. Sorry, Lawrence. I still agree with past me. I couldn't remember if I did or not.
The audience has come over to my side and are even now purchasing The Pope's Exorcist from Video On Demand. You want to purchase it because you are going to want to see it more than once.
Okay, see, anyway. But when Lawrence was texting me this stuff, I can't tell if he's like, yeah, this movie sucks and it's really funny, or if he's like, I'm genuinely enjoying this. And so this movie, I texted him, I can't tell if you're recommending this or not. And then he got very offended by it.
You know, this movie exists beyond the good bad movie dichotomy where it is just fun and you can't quite, and I think it knows that it is stupid. Because you don't hire Russell Crowe to play an Italian if you're not being dumb. Fair point. And then the other book thing is, this is a book by the great Robert R. McCammon. It is called Stinger. It is from the 1980s. It is one of his doorstopper 80s novels, although it's later in the 80s. I believe it came out in 88, so it's not quite as insane as his early 80 novels. I think he probably, either he got used to cocaine or he had a worse cocaine connect, so he couldn't get as much of it. But anyways, an alien crash lands outside a small Texas town, and then an alien bounty hunter pursues her and crash lands next to her. The alien bounty hunter erects a force field around the town and starts building like these weird biomechanical zombie monsters and like chasing everyone. It is not quite as good as They Thirst or Usher's Passing, but it is still just very fun seeing Robert R. McCammon do stuff. One of the plot points is there are two ethnic street gangs called the Renegades and the Rattlesnakes who are going at it. And he handles that surprisingly well for a white guy in the 80s, basically portraying them both as like kids who are fronting and who don't really actually mean to hurt anyone. And I don't know, it's got some really good like weird alien carnage and, it's fun. Also, the alien,
cool as hell.
Yeah, also for some reason, the alien mostly speaks in a thick Texas drawl, like the bad alien speaks in a thick Texas drawl. And says a bunch of homie stuff like "Don't serve me bullshit" or "Don't serve me bullshit on a platter, boy." Only with a Texas accent as opposed to whatever the fuck that was. Anyways, let's just seek it out. And
So the evil alien bounty hunter is essentially just like a bad guy from an old West movie.
Well, it's weird because it's actually a giant centipede monster, but it keeps like stealing people's corpses and turning them into cyborgs and making them do its talking.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. And no caution from me. Anyways, anyone got a plug? I've got one prepped if we don't.
I have no plug.
Nope.
Okay. Well, my plug is just go look at pictures of Roadrunners, or if you live in the American Southwest, go look at a Roadrunner. They're really cool. I keep saying that, but I get the feeling that maybe our listeners aren't looking at Roadrunners, and they should be. Yeah. Also, watch the Pope's Exorcist and prove Ronald wrong yet again.
I didn't see it, so I don't know that it's not good.
The audacity of suggesting that I would recommend something that isn't good.
Well, but you recommend a movie by pointing out the worst parts about it.
Well, Ronald, I got to caution you from watching it, though, because if you do end up enjoying it, he's just going to say that he owned you.
Oh, yeah. You're right. And if I don't like it, then I just wasted my time watching a stupid movie.
And I'll have owned you that way. So the only way
it's a real lose-lose situation for me.
But if you don't watch it and you really would have liked it, then he owned you by like, you know, reverse psychologying you into not watching something you would have liked.
And also, spoiler alert, I'm probably going to make us watch it next month anyway. So,
you know what? Then that's a win for me because I'm forced to do it.
Yeah. Anyways, from all of us at God damn it. From all of us at Satan, don't Bad Time Radio. It's good for you. So, I don't know. From all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you. And have a great week. If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna gather it.